Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
I'm thinking about a kid who lives in my neighborhood. He used to play guitar for the worship band at our church, but today he's choosing cocaine. What advice would you give to that kid?
You know, it's just a road that's a dead end, and it seems fun at first. You're laughing, and you get the high, but you're just, you know, you got to come to your own low. I mean, you tell people that over and over. People told me, but I did it anyway. And some people, I would just tell them that, you know, be careful what they're doing.
I'm Jim Burns. Now, most of us parents know that we need to do all we can to educate our children about the dangers of drug and alcohol abuse. However, sometimes that message doesn't always get through to our kids until the drug war hits our own home. Kathy Pride knows what that's like. Her son Matt was a pretty good kid until he started using marijuana at the age of 16 to numb the pain of adolescence. Over the next few years, Matt's addiction pulled his entire family into a world they really weren't prepared to deal with. During the next half hour, I'll continue my conversation with Kathy Pride about what she learned from Matt's experience about how to cope when the drug war hits home. So stay with us. It is a very special edition today of Homeward. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. You know, dealing with a teen addicted to drugs is devastating, but one mom proves that with love and a lot of perseverance and an openness to God's hand, it can be done. We have Kathy Pride with us, a continuing conversation. Kathy, welcome back to Homeward.
Delighted.
Writer, speaker, parent educator, advocate for people who need healing and hope, mother of four children, including her son Matt, who we're going to talk more about, whose drug addiction recovery is actually chronicled in a book called Winning the Drug War at Home, written by Kathy, and she lives in Danville, Pennsylvania. A lot of states have Danvilles in it.
11.
11 states. Well, it's great to have you from the Danville, Pennsylvania state here in our studio here in Southern California today. For those who missed our last conversation, Kathy, I want you to tell us a little bit about your son, Matt. How did marijuana kind of wreak havoc in his life during those teenage years?
Bright kid, model child, no pun intended. He had actually done TV commercials, done a little bit of child modeling, peer mediator, great athlete. Just decided to make some of his own choices and decided he was going to try marijuana. It overtook his life and just changed him into a very different person.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes for some people it changes them dramatically, and other times it's over a time period that a drug sort of takes hold. In this case, Matt really did become a different person, but he was in somewhat denial. You were in denial, but he was in somewhat denial as well. Now, in your book, Winning the Drug War at Home, you actually excerpt some of Matt's letters that he wrote to you from the wilderness experience. I believe it was in the summer of 2002.
That's right.
And the courts had kind of ordered boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Howie, your husband and yourself found it kind of therapeutic, actually, for him to be away.
Oh, it was such a relief. Yeah. It was a relief. But
when he started writing these letters, what was he saying to you? What was he learning? What was he experiencing?
You talk about that numbing effect and the fact that the drug takes away the pain, and he really hadn't learned how to cope with his own emotions. And so that process is one that unfolded for him in that therapeutic wilderness program. We're just really thankful that he had that opportunity. It was survival. It was going out into the wilderness, hanging their stuff in bear bags at night, really just bare bones. When I put him on that airplane, he had nothing, and it was relatively soon post 9/11, and this raised some eyebrows. Who's this kid traveling with no carry-on luggage at all, not even a bag?
And when that happened and, you know, you sent him off, you and Howie are back home now. What's going on in your head?
Who are you? Have we been living in the same house for the past year? We can have a conversation. We can start doing things with our daughters who were preschool age at that point. They'd been shuffled and dropped off at various babysitters, community centers abruptly because a crisis would come up and I'd have a fire I'd have to put out. And we just didn't have to be concerned about where was he, what was he doing, was the phone going to ring late at night?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because when you think about people who have at-risk kids, who are doing at-risk behaviors, a lot of times it really puts a strain on the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. It puts a strain on the marriage.
Absolutely.
And that happened with you.
Absolutely. There is no doubt that this is a family disease, and it affects absolutely everybody in that family. But also, my husband and I came from differing perspectives. He's much more of a reasonable, logical, black and white person than I am. I'm a very emotional shade of gray kind of person. You know, when you go to paint a house and you're looking for a white paint chip, there's about 387 different colors of white. Well, I have that many different shades of gray in how I would approach decisions. So it was a problem.
So how did you guys work this out? Because there are people who are listening right now who are saying, we're in the midst of this. And it may not be what Matt's problem was with marijuana,
right.
Maybe something else. But they're saying, you know, my husband and I are hardly having conversation. My wife and I don't even like each other anymore. I'm not sure we can come back.
Sure.
In hindsight, what would you suggest in the midst of the trauma for a couple?
Well, you know, you need to get with each other and make those decisions ahead of time together and present that united front. I can't emphasize how important that is. And you may be looking at your husband saying, I don't agree with you. And you're right. I don't like you very much right now, but I do value this family. I do love my child. And if we're approaching problem solving from that perspective, then we need to put the need of resolving this conflict ahead of those things. So let us make that time to really reach some areas where we can agree and use that as the basis and foundation and go from there.
You know, it's funny. I've often told people, Kathy, and I want to know what you think about this. I've often said, you know, obviously it's hard to put your life into compartments, nice and neat. Now, in some ways, what I'll tell people, though, is, you know what, go on a date night. And
absolutely.
At this point, just put the stuff aside. It's there. Try not to just have the all-encompassing conversation about it and actually try to enjoy each other's company. Would you suggest that's a good idea?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wish we'd had this conversation when we were going in the middle of it, because you forget about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You're just in such crisis mode and such urgent mode that you forget about that intimacy or that tenderness that was there. Right. And I think you really need to get that.
Yeah. And
again,
when you're in crisis mode living, you tend to just spin the plate of whatever the crisis
absolutely.
Is instead of work on intentionally mm-hmm. on your marriage, mm-hmm. on the other kids. And you're so right. Now, I want to go back to the conversation we were having when he was away. Some letters were going back and forth.
Right.
You were writing him letters. He was writing you letters. I think actually you faxed them back and
right.
forth, if I'm not mistaken. Well, these letters were pretty rough to read for you in some ways. What did you learn from Matt's words about your own parenting style in terms of things that he actually, in some ways, let you know how he was feeling?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of raw honesty there. And I think that reading them, I really understood and had to admit that I knew that some of those behaviors had been in place. I was pretty good at the shame, blame, condemnation game.
And that's what you call the ABCs.
Yeah. So
shame, blame,
and condemnation.
Okay.
How come you couldn't do a better job of this? Just small, insidious comments that have a huge effect on destroying or tearing down someone's self-esteem. To hear him be able to express his emotions and see him work through that pain, acknowledge that relationships are two-sided and that I contributed, and my husband also contributed to that pain. He writes in some of his letters about how he sensed he never even really had a relationship with his dad. That's hard stuff. But my sense was, when we got those letters that he wrote from the Therapeutic Wilderness Program, it was the first time I really felt hope that we were going to get through this. We had worked with an educational consultant. I didn't know such people existed. He helped us identify the program that he felt would be the best healing option for Matt. That individual said, you'll get your son back. You will have that relationship restored. And I looked right at him and I said, I don't believe you. I just don't believe you. And this summer, with him spending that time in Utah and writing those letters, I started to believe those words.
That's pretty incredible. Matt said once to you that he felt you were more worried about getting your point across than listening to what he had to say. I think that a lot of kids say that.
Sure.
But that was probably hurtful.
It was. And, you know, that's a longstanding behavior. We just had a conversation the other night. He was out here in California visiting his girlfriend. They didn't quite allow for the traffic thing. And he got to the airport 37 minutes ahead of his flight. And they wouldn't let him check his bag. He had to be there 45 minutes ahead. And
we're not in Danville, Pennsylvania.
Right, we're not in Danville, Pennsylvania. This is LAX, buddy.
Right.
Okay, and he called to say, you know, then his flight got delayed. He made it to Chicago, but he was on standby, and they didn't have room for him. And I found myself starting to drift towards, you know, if you'd have just gotten to the airport a little bit sooner, this wouldn't have happened. And he's like, I really don't want to talk about it. I didn't say it that way, but I said, right. You know, I'm sure there's a lesson in this, and you're old enough to figure out what that is. But, And I started to drift there. And I apologized the next morning when he called me in and finally arrived in Syracuse. He was going back to school. He's a senior at Ithaca College. You know, I said, let me apologize. I started to take my conversation someplace where it really didn't need to go.
Right. Well, actually, that is an incredible parenting conversation. And actually, all of us need to learn. Sometimes it just means an apology. Mm-hmm. And he was wrong. But if we apologize saying we're going to go there, it shows great strength and authenticity and integrity on our part.
Boy, those are three very powerful words that a parent can use in the life of a child. When we do something that is not appropriate and requires an apology, you say, I was wrong, to your kids. It really goes a long way when it's used appropriately, of course. From the studios of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Actually, we've reached the midpoint of today's edition of the program. We're hearing part two of Jim's conversation with Kathy Pride, talking about what to do when the drug war hits home. And Kathy's written a book about her experience with her son, Matt, and it's called Winning the Drug War at Home. And it's a book that Dr. Jim Burns highly recommends. We have other resources too. Dr. Jim Burns has written a book called Teaching Your Kids About Drugs, and it's a very, very vital resource. It's one of many that you can purchase in our online resource center at homeward.com. So check us out there today, homeward.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Kathy Pride with us today. We're talking about when the drug war hits home. She's written a great book called Winning the Drug War at Home. If you've not read a book on drugs or drug and alcohol abuse and use, this is a compelling story, but it's also going to help you help your kids in a big way. Kathy is a writer and a speaker, parent educator, and she's just an advocate for people who need healing and hope. Mother of four children, lives in Danville, Pennsylvania with her husband Howie and those kids. We're talking about the story of Matt, whose drug addiction and recovery is pretty much chronicled in this book, Winning the Drug War at Home. Kathy, you realized with Matt that you had made several mountains out of molehills, and we all do this as parents. What do other parents who are dealing with a troubled child need to know about this?
Well, you know, I probably should have learned more about normal teen behavior because that could have served as a really good grounding. I mean, we talked about this before. Teenagers get moody. Teenagers get belligerent. How do you tell the difference? One of the huge issues for me was he couldn't get up in the morning. Well, did it ever occur to me that maybe he just wasn't a morning person? And I always ascribe that to he was out too late last night. He was making bad choices. He's hungover. He's doped up. He can't get moving. But he doesn't have a good track record with making flights on time. This is kind of a consistent story. But we actually had his brother enroll in a therapeutic wilderness program to really kind of go through some of those responsibility learning behaviors. And Matt went with me to the family weekend for his brother at the conclusion of his program. And we were flying out of Utah, and Matt wouldn't get up. And we knew Matt was clean, but we couldn't get him out of bed. Finally, at that point, it dawned on me that this was just part of his makeup. And I think really paying attention to normal teen behavior.
Yeah. It's really good you say that, because a lot of times I'll be going through some at-risk stuff and I see parents kind of go, my goodness, that's my kid. And I have to say, every kid who is at risk does this, but also other normal
kids.
You know, they're not, many kids don't do well early morning. Many kids struggle with friendships. Many kids go through some kind of change of behavior that scares us. But again, as parents, we've got to keep working on this. I find that a lot of parents will even read up or go to seminars, listen mm-hmm. to stuff when the kids are younger. But as they become teens and preteens, they kind of go, okay, I know it all. Well, actually, it's a different beast that shows up at about age 12, and we've got to almost relearn how we do parenting and relearn what these kids are going
through. We do, absolutely. You know, and I teach prenatal classes. I prepare those parents for the big delivery, and I say, well, you know, the job's just beginning now. But you're right, and there isn't an owner's manual. These kids don't come with an owner's manual. It's a problem.
Yeah. You referred in an earlier conversation, you were talking about how this really brought you right to God, and in many ways, your faith was enhanced and changed and redeemed. You were redeemed through all this. I want you to talk about how prayer was very important for you kind of during some of the separation with Matt, and also through some of the issues where you really had to trust in God, not in yourself.
Absolutely. You know, there were several people who were praying for me, for our family. Some of them we knew about, some of them we only became aware of later on. But there was always a sense with our church family, and we're very fortunate in this, that there was no shame, there was no blame, there was no condemnation there. There was truly a loving, welcoming response. I absolutely knew that those individuals were praying for us. And there was a tremendous peace in knowing that that intercession was going on for our family at all times. And oftentimes for me, I didn't know how to pray. I would just go, oh, and it's that groaning. It's that moaning. And sometimes it would just simply be, help me.
And I appreciate saying this because my experience says that a lot of times we're embarrassed. We feel shame, so we don't talk about it in church. And yet most of the time the church comes through. Yeah, there are terrible church stories. I get this. But in reality, if we're willing to be open and vulnerable, people are going to come out of the woodwork, not only to help us, but then tell us a story that we didn't know.
Absolutely.
And that was your experience too, wasn't it?
It was. And I really appreciate Rick Warren in The Purpose-Driven Life. He talks about the fact that if you're willing to share, your greatest pain, your greatest shame, your greatest misery will become your greatest ministry in terms of reaching out to other people. Who better knows what you're going through than someone who's been through it themselves?
Exactly. Well, that's why I love having this conversation with you, because you're in process still, but you're learning through this. And I appreciate it. Boy, that's good preaching. Misery to ministry. Now, you also had somebody else who's kind of well-known within the world talk to you and kind of gave you a little pep talk, if you would. I want you to talk about how you received a huge dose of encouragement from none other than Mr. T.
Mr. T, another LAX story, but we travel a fair amount. We were on an airplane and, my husband said, hey, look over there. And I'm like, I know I should recognize him, but I don't. Who is it? You know, the big gold spoon around his neck didn't give it away. But when he started, bobbing and boxing this virtual opponent, I got it, but missed my opportunity to speak to him at that point. But getting off in LA at baggage claim, I approached him and I had a copy of a book I had just purchased, and the title of that book was Praying Like Jesus. And I went up to him and said, I would love it if you would be willing to autograph this book for my son. And he looked at the title and he reached down into his bag and he pulled out a Bible and he said, I would be pleased to. I would be honored to do that. And he looked at me and he said, my grandmother has always said, you can't have a testimony without a test.
Testimony without a test. That's great.
And how true.
And that's your story in many ways.
It is.
Yeah. Now, you got to fill us in on how Matt's doing today. You said he's in college. He's at Ithaca College. What's happening in his life?
I am just so proud of him, and I take every opportunity now that I can to communicate that message to him. I love you. I'm proud of you. It hasn't been easy. Yeah. You're a renegade. You don't always follow the straight and narrow, but you're there. He is going to be graduating with a degree in outdoor adventure leadership. And that is a direct tie-in to the time he spent in the Therapeutic Wilderness Program in Utah. Now, he started out as a business school major. I never quite figured that one out. He's not the kind of kid that belongs behind a desk, right? This is the one who did the flip in the air off the big old mountain of snow. And he took some time off, and that was fine, and explored. He spent a summer living in a tent on the north shore of Oahu. He went to New Zealand another summer, took some time off, and worked at that big mountain resort in Breckenridge. And we knew he was growing up out there when he had that accident, and he was able to negotiate insurance coverage for the surgery with our HMO back home. He took care of all of that himself. Oh, it's a big step. But he came back, changed his major, is pursuing this degree in outdoor adventure leadership. It's his final academic semester. He has an internship, and he's one of the applications he's putting in. He's talking about going back and working at the program in which he was enrolled.
Well, it's a testimony without a test. He had a test, and now he's got a testimony.
That's right.
In terms of being able to talk about being freed from drug addiction, which, unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the courage to face, and he did, and you did. I appreciate that so much. We don't have much time left, but I want you to talk to the parent who is listening, who may be dealing with a son or a daughter who is addicted to drugs, or even some other kind of unhealthy behavior. What kind of hope would you offer that parent?
Well, you just never give up. You absolutely never give up. I would encourage you to introduce grace and love into the conversation far sooner than we did. But get your head out of the sand, too. It is a reasonable approach to take to say, what is the worst case scenario, and begin to allow yourself to think that that actually may be what's going on. But communicate, and you can't start that soon enough. So if you're listening, if you have younger kids, go for it.
Great, great input. Kathy, thank you so much for your input.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for your story, your courage. Just, you're a great person. I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks.
And that concludes Dr. Jim Burns' conversation with Kathy Pride here on the Homeward Broadcast. Our theme has been When the Drug War hits home. Kathy, the author of the book, Winning the Drug War at Home. And if you missed any part of today's program, remember we are podcasting through iTunes, and you can start that free subscription when you go to homeward.com. Hit the podcast button, follow the prompts there, and you can get that free subscription going so you can hear these programs anytime you want to on your MP3 device, like an iPod. We're also streaming audio at homeward.com, and so if you missed the program on the radio, you can go to homeward.com and hit the radio button and listen to what you missed, and also push it on to your friends, too. Let them know what's happening in the world of Homeward and ways it can help you as a parent as well.
I want to mention, right before we close, gateway drugs. A lot of parents don't understand this, but gateway drugs start, and your kids today will have their first drink, if they're on the average, at age 12. But beer and wine is the gateway, and it's strong. Most kids will try it. Then it moves to nicotine, and nicotine is one of the strongest gateway drugs, because when kids start nicotine, for example, and I don't know that this was Matt's story, but the truth is that if a kid smokes, there is an 80% chance that they will try marijuana. If a kid chooses not to smoke, there's only a 20% chance that they'll move up the gateway toward marijuana or even harder alcohol, which takes me to the next level of the gateway, harder alcohol and marijuana use. Now, harder alcohol, a couple things about that, parents. If you have alcoholism in your system, and about 25% of the families in America do, then there is a greater chance that your kids will have a biological predisposition toward alcoholism. Alcoholism is predisposed in families. That doesn't mean that you can't be a problem drinker or have other issues if you don't have alcoholism within your system. But if your family does have alcoholism in the system, then it's important for you to help your kids understand that. And if they're moving up the gateway to harder alcohol, it could be that there's a problem with alcohol. Another issue with alcohol is that all alcoholics, notice that I said all alcoholics have a high tolerance toward alcohol. So they can drink more alcohol. So in these rehab centers that we've been talking about, as the alcoholics get together, they say, yeah, I can drink, you know, a lot. Now, when they come in, they say they can't drink a lot. They say they have a few beers, but they're not there because they drank a few beers. They're there because they could consume vast amounts of alcohol, and they could be a small little 97-pound cheerleader, and she can still consume a lot of alcohol, and she's an alcoholic then. So alcohol, and then marijuana, as we've been talking about today. One of the things that we said, and I'll say it again, marijuana is not the same marijuana that was smoked in the 70s. It's 5 to 20% stronger. It's often laced with some type of other drug. So make sure that you understand this as parents, because you can do a lot of good and help your kids. I would also add prescription pills here, that so many times today kids are doing what they call farming, and what they're doing is they're maybe going to a party and they'll even throw the pills into a bowl, and then they'll start picking out pills. They don't even know what it is, and it might be Adderall or Ritalin, or it might be Vicodin or other types of medication. And yeah, it does get them a bit high, but this is really, really dangerous, and you got to know this as parents. And it didn't happen probably when you were in school, but it is today. Then we move to things like crystal meth, cocaine, even LSD and heroin and things like that. But kids don't start on that. They start with beer and wine. And so sometimes even as parents, we'll say, well, this is not that big a deal. But the truth is that as kids move through the gateway, it gets tougher and tougher and tougher. And that's why we need to have programs like this. And I appreciate so much Kathy Pride being with us today as we talk about her book, Winning the Drug War at Home. When the drug war hits your home, be prepared.
And it's not a matter of if, it's a question of when, as Dr. Jim Burns just mentioned. Homeward is here to equip you to deal with those seasons of life. And one of the ones that we've talked about today on the program and on the previous edition of the Homeward broadcast involves drug and alcohol use and abuse among kids. You need resources. We have resources for you. When you go to homeward.com, our Good Advice Parent newsletter comes your way each and every month. Talks about very topical issues like gateway drugs. Also, the Homeward Daily Online Devotional, which is a nugget of encouragement from God's Word around a Bible verse, and you can use these each and every day. Very, very easy to do, and you can start that subscription at homeward.com. And when you're at homeward.com, consider a year-end contribution in support of our ministry, would you? Our absolutely secure website is where you can make that contribution. A gift of $100 or $500 or more goes a long way toward helping us continue this ministry at homeward.com. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.